Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome back to another episode of the Madhouse Podcast. As always, I am your host, Mad Max. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about the new WWE documentary called Becoming Immortal, which is the documentary that the WWE released chronologizing the life and career of Bray Wyatt. I knew from the moment they announced it that this was going to be an emotional roller coaster of a ride because of how much this guy went through and how much this guy was so meticulous and such a perfectionist in his craft that it's almost tragic that he suddenly passed away in August of 2023 at the very young age of 36. And I never really understood, you know, like even to this day, I never really understood, you know, how Bray Wyatt passed away so suddenly. And I was just beside myself when I learned of his passing. And, you know, he was on the verge of a comeback and things like that. And it didn't really, you know, it didn't really seem real. It doesn't seem real now, you know. But this documentary kind of goes deep into his career, basically. Basically, it's like his own autobiography, because Peacock had done several of these before. They did one for Ric Flair. They did one for Cody Rhodes. I think when the WWE Network got on with Peacock, they did the they did one for The Undertaker, because The Undertaker had his on there, and Undertaker the Last Ride was on there and things like that. So that was cool, to kind of say the least, and everything like that. But then I want to say it was like right around like a month and a half ago, they announced they were going to do one for Bray Wyatt. And I thought, wow, that's interesting, you know, because, you know, he passed away in August of last year, and it's been, what, 6 months and things like that. And, you know, it was shocking to hear his death and everything like that. So basically the story starts off, you know, he was born he's the son of Mike Rotunda. If you don't know who that is, Mike Rotunda had a pretty successful longevity career in professional wrestling. He was IRS to a lot of guys in the early 90s. You know, he was also had a good run in WCW in the early days. He's the brother-in-law of Barry Windham. You know, if you don't know who that is, Barry Windham, I believe, was one of the original Four Horsemen back in the day and everything like that. Barry, a great wrestler in his own right and everything like that. But Bray Wyatt, whose real name is Wyndham Rotunda, was born, natural athlete, played college ball. He was actually playing college football at Troy before he got started in professional wrestling. A lot of people remember his first initial run in the late 2000s, early 2010s as Husky Harris, one of the seven contestants on NXT, when NXT was still kind of like a game show and things like that. We saw a lot of guys come up from there, including Wade Barrett, Daniel Bryan, Ryback, obviously Bray Wyatt, Justin Gabriel came out of there, David Otunga came out of there, Heath Slater came out of there, and things like that. And it was something different. You know what I mean? Like, this was something that you did not see a whole lot of. And it really kind of goes to show you that everybody was kind of just clamoring for a spot and everything like that. And like, if you look at the roster of guys he came up with, I'm talking about Bray Wyatt, you know, during that NXT run, you had earlier on guys like You know, he came up with the Sami Zayns and the Corey Graves and the Kevin Owens, you know, the Seth Rollins and everything like that. And you know, he was part of that initial group in the beginning and things like that. But you know, as time went on, it was really going to become a major factor that this guy was, you know, on the verge of becoming something more and everything like that. Like, they brought him up to be Husky Harris, but he himself wasn't really feeling that character. And then when he got together with with Triple H, who eventually would become the head of talent relations in NXT, it all kind of turned sour after that, because now we have this, you know, this new guy on the rise and things like that, and you know, this could definitely be something. And it was different. It was different, to say the least. And whether or not it was, the right move, it definitely paid off in the long run, because then he started changing into that character that we know him now, you know, the eater of worlds and things like that. You know, the whole, you know, with the straw hat and the Hawaiian shirts, you know, he modeled himself after Robert De Niro in the movie Cape Fear and things like that. So, you know, there was something there. He was really, really onto something. And you know, it kind of goes to show you that he was really, really banking on himself and being able to continue this journey that he was on, and eventually would create what we now know as the Wyatt family. And you know, Luke Harper was in on it, Eric Rowan was in on it, and this group kind of really kind of came from beneath the trenches and really, really rose to stardom, first in NXT, and then they made their debut on the main roster, and it was weird. It really was. They were a weird group, you know, but they were weird yet entertaining. They were like the modern day version of the Brood. Like, you were kind of intimidated by them, but you couldn't take your eyes off them either. And then you had this incredible mouthpiece in Bray Wyatt. You had this incredible work at work ethic from the workhorse himself, Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper. And then of course you had Eric Rowan, you know, 6'10", could take out anybody and things like that. You know, it was something special. This was a really good group, and they went up against a lot of good guys. You know, they went up against, you know, the early days of them in the Shield, you know, when it was them against Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and things like that. You know, that was really something special. You know, you couldn't look away from a group like this. You couldn't take your eyes off them. You couldn't be enamored with these guys, especially Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt was just an all around great. You know, he had, you know, he didn't really have the best of moves and everything like that, but his storytelling, as far as promos, as far as ring work and everything like that, it worked to his benefit. He made it work. He told great stories with his body language, with his promos and everything like that. This guy was on top of the world. He was on top of his shit. That by the time 2014 had come around, or 2015 had come around, he was already in a WrestleMania. He was already in a WrestleMania match against the top guy himself, John Cena. I mean, if you look at his WrestleMania, from WrestleMania 30, 31, and 32, the who's who that he went up against, it was something special. His first WrestleMania match, he goes up against John Cena. The second WrestleMania match, he goes up against The Undertaker. His third WrestleMania moment, or his third WrestleMania, and he has that great in-ring bout with The Rock. And then the following year after that, he wins his first WWE championship. And this guy, you know, you couldn't miss with him. No matter what they did, you know, all the stuff that they did with him, you know, as they phased out the Wyatt family, and Bray kind of went off on his own and everything like that. And then they brought in Braun Strowman, which another great character that they did, and everything like that. It was really something special to see that Bray could do things that he did for a long time and still be considered one of the best, if not the best, character that they had seen in a long time. You know, I put him up there as one of the great characters that the WWE had not necessarily created, but more so that they had done an amazing job as far as developing him or let him develop and everything like that. Even Triple H said the guy is just full of ideas and everything like that, and he's just beside himself when it came to doing anything. You know, we have one idea that he wants to do, and you know, he comes back with like 10 or 15 more ideas, and it's like we always had to ring him in and things like that. But a lot of the stuff that he was talking about, a lot of the stuff that he was doing, it worked. It worked out in his benefit, and you couldn't ask that from another great performer. You couldn't get that from a lot of the other guys. Everybody wanted to be, you know, either the top guy, or everybody wanted to do it their way, but they really didn't, before they could, you know, get over and things like that and do things on their terms, it had to work. And with Bray Wyatt, it worked from the beginning because he was getting such a great reaction from, you know, everybody involved, everybody he was working with. I mean, if you look at all the guys he worked with from NXT down to the main roster, everybody has nothing but the great things to say about him and things like that. And then, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, he's the one caught up in a slew of releases that happened, and you know, it really kind of it fucks with him emotionally and mentally, because here was a guy who was doing the one thing that he loved, and then the thing that he loved kind of turned his back on him and things like that because of the whole pandemic thing and stuff like that. And it really, really sucked what, you know, they unfortunately did to him and things like that. And you know, he had a great run in the WWE, and then I don't know, for some reason he reinvents himself to be the Fiend, and he wins the Universal title twice, has that amazing run with Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns, and then right as he's on the cusp of reinvigorating that character in 2021, they let him go. And a lot of, man, people were pissed. You know, I know I was. I was like, dude, why of all people to release, you release him? You know, his brother Taylor was also a wrestler. He went by the name Bo Dallas. A lot of people know who that is and things like that. But it was pitiful that, you know, we would see all these guys get released. You know, some of them would come back, some of them wouldn't. But it was just really unfortunate that Bray ended up, you know, not getting, you know, the respect that he deserved, because, you know, for the WWE to release him the way they did, and then he had to wait like a whole almost a year and a half just to come back, just to do anything and everything like that. And it sucked. It really did. You could tell in the documentary, you know, he said it took him a while to kind of, you know, get back from that, and he didn't know really how to cope with it. And you know, luckily his brother was out on the outs too, and it was just like, you know, if they had not had each other during this whole thing, it would have, you know, it would have been bad. But you know, he found other hobbies, he got into art, he got into doing a lot of things that he wanted to do, and you know, that's always great. You know, when you find something that you're passionate about, or you find something that, you know, you can still do avenues as and still be creative from a creative standpoint, that's always good. It's always healthy and things like that. But Bray wanted to do a lot of different things. He wanted more than what he wanted other things and things like that. But at the same time, he still wanted in a lot of ways, he still wanted to come back, which is what his brother Taylor had kept saying throughout this throughout the documentary. Like, as good as we were, and as good as we could be, we knew that eventually we were going to have to get back in the ring. And you know, luckily he had one of the great returns of 2023 at Extreme. Oh no, it was at 2022. He came back during Extreme Rules, and it was one of those things that you didn't really see coming. You know, the rumors were flying high that this could be Bray Wyatt and things like that, and it was going to be something that we had never seen before. And you know, sure enough, the build to something that was different, a lot of people didn't know what to expect when it came time to do those little vignettes about Follow the White Rabbit and things like that. Like, what is this? Like, where is this going? And things like that. And then sure enough, at Extreme Rules, we knew something was going to happen. We knew something like this was going to go down. We knew something big was going to go down because they kept, you know, they were building it for months. Like, what is this white rabbit shit that they keep talking about? And then a lot of people thought it was going to be something different. Like, it was going to be something like a new character or something different, like something we had not seen before. And a lot of people were right. You know, it was something different. It was something that we had not seen before. But what people didn't know was that Bray Wyatt was going to make his debut that night. And for Bray Wyatt to make his debut that night, but at the end of the show, like, a lot of people didn't, like, that was the one thing I had not seen before. I had not seen somebody make their return at the very, like, the match was over. You know, it was like, it was that Lion's Den match, or it was that cage match that they had with Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle. And, you know, Riddle's walking up the stage and, you know, you see the little logo in the corner, and then all of a sudden the lights go out. And then there's that great ominous shadow and all this other stuff is going on. And then you just hear that real raspy voice. He's got the whole world in his hands. And I was like, this is fucking Bray Wyatt. And the fact that they had all the characters that he had been over the year, you know, over the years and everything like that, that was really cool. And then the fact that he takes off his new mask and blows out the lantern. And I was like, yeah, that was really cool. And it sets him up on a path. You know, that was at Extreme Rules in October. But he doesn't really have, like, any real solid moments in the ring just yet. They're building towards this match that takes place at the Royal Rumble in 2023 between him and the newest and freshest face that they have on the main roster, this guy by the name of LA Knight. Yeah. You know, this was something that was... to be honest, that was the first time I had ever heard of LA Knight. You know, when he got called up to the main roster, he wasn't really doing a whole lot, but then they put him with Bray Wyatt, and I was like, all right, this could work. And he had that, it sounded silly, you know, the whole Mountain Dew pitch black match at the Royal Rumble, right? And I was like, this looks weird, you know what I mean? Like, this is different. I don't understand how this is going to work, but, it worked out. Like, the whole thing was like, you know, that glow in the dark look, and they had all these different characters that they were trying to do, and, you know, it looked cool. It looked to be the beginning of something interesting and things like that. And then is when it really, I think after the Royal Rumble, it really started to go downhill from there. And to be honest, I think that's where, you know, something, it went downhill in a way that nobody saw coming. During a house show, they were in, I can't remember where they were, but they were doing a house show somewhere, and he was in the ring with LA Knight. And LA Knight tells the story that, yeah, I was in the ring with Bray. You know, he's, you know, we got this whole spot where he's going to put me to the table. And he said, right in the middle of me doing the move to me, he said his calf buckled. He said he felt a pain in his calf and his knee buckled. And it's like, whoa. And he was, you all right? He goes, yeah. And he didn't know what that was. Like, it wasn't so much like a sharp pain. You know, he didn't feel like he blew something out or anything like that. It just felt funny. Like, he couldn't put weight on it and things like that. And then sure enough, about a week after that match, he tested positive for COVID-19, and that's where things just got really, really bad. It started messing with his cardiovascular stuff, and once that happened, it became one obstacle after another that he was really, really starting to struggle with. You know, it wasn't so much that he was not taking care of himself, you know, physically and everything like that. Physically, he was in the best shape of his career. You know, he looked like he had put on some weight. You know, not necessarily overweight, but I'm talking about like muscle and things like that. And it looked as if, you know, he was looking to be in probably the best physical shape of his career. And for some reason, he was just, you know, it was becoming apparent that this guy was starting to slowly be taken off television. You know, he make appearances here and there, and The rumor was he was supposed to fight Bobby Lashley at WrestleMania 39, but that didn't happen. And then he got sick, and you know, then his sickness got worse, and you know, he had a lot of this cardiovascular things that were going on. You know, the doctors would say he'd be fine. You know, he'd be fine. He'd be clear to go. But for some reason, he would just feel bad, like something would be off, and things like that. And I remember when they were getting to that part of the story. You know, basically this was the last moments of his life. I kept thinking to myself, I was like, man, Eddie Guerrero went through something similar. Like, there would be days where he'd be in the ring and he'd be just having the best match on the card, tearing it down. And then, like, Kurt Angle had said the same thing. Like, Eddie would be in the ring and he'd be on fire. And then, some odd reason, the next day he would come in and it would be something completely different. Like, something would be off and we would see it. And, you know, it was almost as if Bray was going through the same thing. It's like he was going through, I don't want to say he was going through something, but it's like he knew, he could feel, you know, and no pun intended here, he could feel in his heart that something was off. Like, he felt off for some reason. Like, he would get tired quickly, or he would get winded really fast. His heartbeat would be elevated and things like that, and it would almost as be if, like, you know, something was wrong. Not necessarily having a heart attack, but just could get exhausted really quick. And there was all this stuff that he was wearing, this special jacket, you know, in the event of his heart stopping. And if his heart stopped, it's like a heart monitor, basically. You know, it'd be like a life vest, and if his heart stopped for whatever reason, it would shock him. And then the one day, you know, they said the one day he didn't wear it, you know, he goes upstairs to take his little, you know, nap and everything like that. And his wife, JoJo, he didn't wake up. And that was how it all went down after that. You know, they said they couldn't do anything. His heart just, he goes, he had a heart attack in his sleep. And, you know, there was nothing they could do, you know. He was originally supposed to be given a pacemaker. And that was what they were originally going to do after the vest treatment was done. And like I said, man, that vest was like legit a lifesaver. And yet the one time he doesn't wear it, it cost him everything, because that's how they presented it. It was the fact that he had all this stuff planned out for the day, and then he goes to rest for a little bit. He goes upstairs to take like a nap, you know, like all of us do. You know, we're tired a little bit of the day, you know, and just kick back, and all of a sudden we just nod off. And, you know, for whatever reason, he didn't wake up. And, you know, it was emotional, you know, when they get to that part of the story. It's like, watching this documentary, it's like you want there to be a light at the end of the tunnel that we're going to get to. There's no, when he got released from the WWE in 2021, that was like the bad moment. That was the drop. You know, it's like you feel as if it was a failure. Then they talk about the promo that he cut. There was that one promo he did cut that, you know, where he's vulnerable for the first time, where he talks about, you know, very, very grateful, and you know, he's emotional. And it's the very first time we've ever, it was almost as if Bray Wyatt was cutting a promo as himself, not as Bray Wyatt the man, but more so as Wyndham Rotunda. And we had never seen that before. And I remember watching that promo, getting teary eyed, just thinking to myself, this dude has worked his ass off to come back, and now he's gonna come back stronger than ever. But yet, 4 months after that promo, he passed away. And it really is eerie, because, you know, that same thing happened to Ultimate Warrior. I mean, he cuts an amazing promo the night after WrestleMania, and then the next day, he has a heart attack in his hotel room and passes away. It's like, wow, man, this is just a bad luck. You know, and it was bad. You know, when, you know, even Triple H gets choked up talking about it. You know, Triple H even had to, he was the one that had to break the news to the guys and girls in the ring that night, right before the show started. And I remember that SmackDown, they had made the announcement, and they had the rocking chair with a lantern, and I think the only two guys, and it's crazy too that the only two guys left from the original Wyatt family are Braun Strowman and Eric Rowan. And man, those guys, it was emotional seeing those two big guys who are like 6'10", 6'11", 300 pounds, just sobbing. And I remember, I'm trying not to get emotional now thinking about it, but I remember when Eddie Guerrero had passed away, and they cut to all the wrestlers standing on the stage, and they did the 10-bell salute, and they cut to the Big Show, and he's sitting there crying. Like him, guys like him, Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit, for those guys to cry and weep for a guy like Eddie Guerrero, you knew it hit them hard. So when it, at the same time with Bray Wyatt, when it cuts to guys like Eric Rowan, Braun Strowman, and even guys like Seth Rollins and Corey Graves and the guys who were just there, it was bad. You know, you knew they were hurting badly. And then the crazy part was that Luke Harper had passed away like 3 years earlier. You know, but even though his passing was sudden too, because he was still actively wrestling too. You know, Luke Harper was still wrestling in AEW, even though he had a new name and new persona and everything like that. It was so sudden. You know, it was so sudden. And then, you know, the same thing with Bray. You didn't see, you know, we knew Bray was hurt. You know, we thought he was hurt those times he was out and everything like that. And then we get word. It's like, I remember it because they made the announcement that Terry Funk had passed away. And I was like, damn, that's crazy. All due respect to Terry Funk. You know, he had been out of wrestling. He's a wrestling icon. He's a Hall of Famer. He's no doubt one of the absolute greats and everything like that. But he was already up in his age at the time of his passing. So for the fact that a mere 25 hours later, they announced that Bray Wyatt had passed away. And it's like, wow, who, you know, what more can you do with that? You know, what more, what is there, where do you go from here? You know, where do you, what is there left for you to do? You know, there's nothing really left. Where do you, how do you pick up the pieces and run with it? You know, it's like, yeah, man, I remember being so emotional when that news broke that Bray Wyatt had passed away. Like, wow, man, we had just, you know, I go back to that day and I remember I was like, dude, the day before, me and my kids watched the Firehouse Funhouse match that he had with John Cena from WrestleMania that year. And, you know, my kids were like, man, he looks scary, you know, and it was just so believable and things like that. You know, it's like this guy was just so ahead of his time. You know, he was the innovator and things like that. He was like the modern day, what Undertaker was to the millennials and us kids, you know, in the 90s and 2000s. Bray Wyatt was that next step, you know what I mean, for the kids of the 2010s, 2020s and things like that. And, you know, this was a heavy blow, man. I'm still struggling to, like, cope with it. And, you know, it's almost as if that Bray, like, watching this documentary, you're hoping that there's going to be this light at the end of the tunnel. You're hoping there's going to be this rise back to the top with Bray Wyatt, but it ends on such a downer that, you know, like, if you've ever seen the movie Selena or La Bamba, it's like watching those movies thinking there's going to be a different outcome, but you kind of already know the outcome because that person is no longer with us. And it's like, man, it sucks. This guy had so much more to give, so much more left in the tank and everything like that. And it was just so sad to hear all these people talk about him and, you know, what a great father he was and what a great husband, brother, friend, whatever he was to these people and things like that. And it was just, it was so sad. It was so heartbreaking. It was so, you know, mesmerizing how loved he was. And the fact that he still had a lot to give. You know, there was still a lot of juice in the tank. There was still, you know, room to grow. There was still, you know, unventured waters that they had not gone with that character and everything like that. And the fact that we're not going to see it again. Well, I don't want to say that we're not going to see it again, because if you actually watch the documentary, they tease a little bit at the end that the Uncle Howdy character was going to make his return, some in the coming weeks or something like that. I was like, damn, is that real? Are they really going to continue the Uncle Howdy storyline, even though Bray has passed away? Because we all knew that the guy in the other mask was Bo Dallas, you know, his brother and everything like that. But we didn't know where that story was going to go, because it ended with the L.A. Knight run. And they started pushing it with Bobby Lashley. They started pushing it with a lot of other guys at the time. But, you know, it didn't really go nowhere because Bray eventually got hurt. And then at the end of the documentary, there's like a little vignette, like, we're not done yet, you know, like the lantern turns back on. And then you see the outline of a silhouette, the guy with the top hat. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. That's the Uncle Howdy character. Is he still around? Are we going to get another? Are we going to get another initial run here? Like, are they setting us up for something here? You know, because this documentary came out today. Today's the first, right? No, today's the second. Yeah, so the documentary dropped yesterday, and we're like this weekend is WrestleMania. So it's like, well, okay, what are we doing? You know, is this really going to, are we really doing this? Are we really going to start something new? Like, where would you go with this storyline, even though its patriarch is no longer here? You know, it's like, wow, okay, that's interesting. I want to see what that sounds cool, because, you know, a lot of people don't give Bo Dallas enough credit. You know, he's a former Intercontinental champion, former tag team champion, him and Curtis Axel. It's like, dude, the guy is there. You know, he's overlooked because he's Bray Wyatt's brother and things like that. But at the same time, it's like, if anybody could get this story over, it would definitely be him. I don't see him winning the world title anytime soon, unless this story that they're going to tell is really over the top. But, you know, who knows? It does pique my interest a little bit, because they didn't. It's like another sense of Cody Rhodes. Somebody's got to finish that story and things like that. But as far as the documentary goes, it's a wonderful story. It's a great moment, because you see how many, all the people, all the lives that he's touched, in that, you know, in the 10 years that he had been around, you know, and things like that. Because I remember when he was Husky Harris, that was 2010. And then, unfortunately, he passed away in 2023. So, that, you know, it's 13 years, man. It's a real number, but it does something to you. And I honestly think that, you know, he's no doubt one of the best of all time, especially from that era and things like that. The fact that I don't know if he's going into the Hall of Fame this year. I think he should. If not this year, for sure next year. You know, but he just left. His career is just marked by the highest of high. And there's not a low point in his career. Like, yeah, there's been some moments where he's been overlooked and devalued at points. But their in-ring work and the promo and stuff, dude, you're not going to be able to get that out of anybody else. The fact that he debuts against John Cena at WrestleMania and then goes back to WrestleMania to face The Undertaker. Like, in my opinion, if you've heard my WrestleMania bit, like my 40 years of WrestleMania, like we did it Sunday the other night. We're already on part 3 and we got to WrestleMania 31, I believe it was. We got to WrestleMania 31, and then I was like, yeah, if anybody was going to beat The Undertaker's streak, it should have been Bray Wyatt. Like all due respect to Roman Reigns, it should have been Bray Wyatt. And, you know, it's crazy that Bray Wyatt kind of got the short end of the stick in that point. But, you know, at the same time, The Undertaker still feel like he earned his respect. And there was a great moment, you know, in the build-up for the Royal Rumble between Bray Wyatt and LA Knight. Undertaker returns as the American Badass, and they kind of share a moment right there, and that was kind of cool. But yeah, man, I think this was just a hell of an emotional roller coaster for everybody who was a fan of Bray Wyatt, or who was a fan of Wyndham Rotunda. You know, this was a great documentary. This was something that we kind of needed. You know, us, the WWE Universe, you know, we kind of needed something like this to kind of have closure. Like, it's okay to let go. It's okay to kind of move on. I don't know if move on is the right word, because, like I said, they did tease us of an Uncle Howdy return imminent, you know, could be on WWE TV here in the next couple of weeks, even though we got WrestleMania this weekend. So You know, if you have not seen Becoming Immortal on Peacock, definitely check it out. Especially if you're a fan of Bray Wyatt and his work. So that's going to go ahead and do it for today's episode. If you liked the episode, be sure to follow the podcast on all podcast outlets, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Google Play, Odyssey, Reddit, wherever you're getting your podcast from. Be sure to follow the podcast on all social media outlets, Instagram and X, the Madhouse21. Let me know what you guys thought about the Bray Wyatt documentary on Peacock. What did you think of it? Were you a fan of Bray Wyatt? What is your favorite Bray Wyatt moment? Were you a fan of his early work, like with the Wyatt family, or were you a fan of his later work where he was the Fiend, where he wore the mask and had all the dreadlocks and everything like that? Whatever the case may be, let me know. Instagram and X, the Madhouse21. Be on the lookout for more episodes as they come out. I originally wanted to do this episode like going into WrestleMania, but then I also got the 40 years of WrestleMania. I'll do that. That final chapter is going to drop sometime this week, sometime this weekend, as we get ready for WrestleMania 40, which is April 6th and 7th, live from Philadelphia. So be on the lookout for that. Be on the lookout for anything and everything that comes out of this podcast. And of course, as always, be sure to embrace your inner madness.